Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Napalm smells best. In the evening, it's not worth believing what you heard. Soylent Green is really just a trinket, not a people biscuit. Take my word. It's been said you can't handle the truth, but that ain't so. How do I know?
When Martin Scorsese was shooting the film The Color of Money, he was handed an early proof of the book Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi. Scorsese had sworn off making another mob film after Mean Streets, but when he read it, he immediately called the book's subject, Henry Hill, and said, "I've been waiting for this book my entire life." To which Hill replied, "I've been waiting for this call my entire life." And that's how Goodfellas began, and how this podcast just began. My name's Matt Gourley, and this is I Was There Too. It's the show where I talk to people who are present in the great scenes of cinema history. And now let's connect last episode's guest to this episode's guest. The bus passengers to Keanu Reeves in Speed. Keanu Reeves to Al Pacino in Devil's Advocate. Al Pacino to Robert De Niro in Heat. Robert De Niro in Heat is something we all would like to see. And Robert De Niro in Heat to Johnny Williams in Goodfellas. That one was pretty tight. He plays Johnny Roast Beef, the guy that buys the new pink Cadillac for his girlfriend after the Lufthansa heist and De Niro lays into him. Goodfellas was a huge hit, although the studio was very nervous about its release. It had extreme violence and something like 296 F-bombs in it. And when they tested the movie for audience, it had the lowest score in the studio's history. But they somehow released the film unaltered, and it was a huge hit. It cemented Martin Scorsese as one of America's greatest filmmakers and movie studios as the dumbest people in the world. If you get a chance, check out the first episode of The Canon with Amy Nicholson and Devin Faraci, their first episode, a kind of sister podcast episode to this. It's about Goodfellas and whether or not it should be inducted into the canon of great films. But more importantly, you seriously might want to get yourself a good meatball hero sandwich or a bowl of pasta. Because we ease into this interview. Johnny Williams is a wonderful guy, and he used to own a deli, so we talk about food a lot up front and at the end. And just listening to him say it, my mouth was watering, and I want to get a meatball sandwich right now. Do yourself a favor, pull over to a fine mom-and-pop deli, get yourself some eggplant parmesan, and sit back and relax. Johnny Williams talking about Goodfellas.
The film, Goodfellas, the year 1990, the role, Johnny Roast Beef, the actor, Johnny Williams.
Well, I'm here with Johnny Williams, who is recognizable from many different things, The Mask, Leaving Las Vegas. We're here to talk to him today about Goodfellas, where you played Johnny Roast Beef, correct?
Right.
What is the origin of Johnny Roast Beef?
It's actually my real nickname.
Really? And how did that come about?
You know, the type of movie Goodfellas is and was at the time, Marty Scorsese being from Little Italy, and knowing the subject matter very well growing up in it, he knows a lot of guys have nicknames. So when he decided to use me in the movie, he had asked me, he says, do you have a nickname? You know, you're from East Harlem, Italian, you know. I says, well, yeah, they call me Roast Beef. He says, Roast Beef? I says, yeah. I says, you know, I own a deli in the neighborhood. You know, wow. So He loved it, and he changed the character's name to Johnny Roast Beef, which it's great. But on the other hand, people say roast beef. I think I know them. You know, I met so many people.
They recognize being in this you, and they call you roast beef.
And it's just from the movie. Uh-huh. So there's a little bit of a dichotomy going on there. You know, hello, you know, and then
that's fantastic. So let's go back. So you owned a deli, and that was in Harlem, East Harlem.
Yeah, I had my first deli was in New York City in East Harlem. It was a place that. I was born two doors down from the deli.
You're kidding.
And it was closed for about 8 to 10 years, but still Italian family owned. They know me since before I was born. They know my family. And what happened was I got this brilliant idea in 1979 to go back to the neighborhood when everyone was leaving.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah.
You were the first to gentrify that place.
Yeah, I don't want to call it gentrification. Believe me, I'm very ethnic when it comes to that. I loved the old neighborhood when it was all Italian, but basically I kind of went against the trend. Uh-huh. And I paid for it dearly because, you know, economically it was a very bad time. 79, 80, 81. That was really the beginning of crack. Uh-huh. And it took over the neighborhood really seriously. Wow. But eventually it panned out. There was a lot of construction started, and I got off the ground, thank God.
You wore it out. You saw through it, huh?
Yeah, I saw through it. I'm kind of like stubborn when it comes to certain things. I didn't want to fail.
What's the deli called?
Johnny's Superheroes.
Whoa!
You had to see. It was unbelievable. The emblem, the trademark I had was like a guy almost like Superman with the outfit, the tights, uh-huh. And in the center instead of the S, I had JSH, and I had him carrying his arms extended over his head, a 6-foot. Italian hero, which we call heroes in New York.
Yeah,
we
hate
to call them subs or whatever. Right. And, you know, and that was my label, my trademark.
Do you have any pictures of that? Because we can post it on the website.
My daughter sent me a picture, believe it or not, of a shirt because I had shirts made up. Uh-huh. And a shirt, she says, Dad, this thing is so delicate. Because what is it? 30 years old? Uh-huh. You know, 25, you know. But I had aspirations of multiple stores at the time, but it didn't pan out. I ended up selling it, and then I went on to another location, which was by CBS on 57th Street, mm-hmm. And then I had partners there, and it was a situation where it was better for me to leave. I was only 25% because I wanted to pursue. My acting, being that I got Goodfellas, State of Grace, really basically one after another.
Yeah.
I just worked all the time and did Law and Order. I did the shows in New York. So I said, you know what, if I'm going to really pursue acting as a profession, I have to go where it's at. And L.A. was where it's at. So
in 91,
I came here.
But before we go into the acting, was there a specialty sub at Johnny's?
Well, we had an Italian sandwich that was – I mean, I used to get my bread made in the Bronx. I had a great bakery, and I had that real light, crispy, crusty Italian bread. In New York, you get –
I'm starving right now, so
yeah,
this is difficult.
And I made an Italian sub with fried eggplant cold, roasted peppers, tomatoes, provolone, gabagool.
Is this your own?
Yeah, I put a whole bunch of Italian, mortadella, Italian cold cuts together.
Oh.
And then, you know, oil, olive oil and vinegar on the bread. And the roasted peppers and the eggplant actually brought out everything in that sandwich. And they loved it.
Does this exist only now in your own personal kitchen?
Yeah.
My question is, how do I get one of these?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm at that point where, you know, people ask me to do it again, but it's so much work.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But it's a great idea. I mean, you know, I don't want to say, but people go to certain corporate places and call it a sandwich. And believe me, there isn't one redeemable quality about it. Then they say, well, we bake our own bread. Yeah. It needs one thing, that bread, a garbage can.
I'll say it. We're talking about Subway.
You said it.
I said it.
I didn't.
Look, we're not sponsored by them. We can take them to task.
Yeah.
How dare they?
Yeah.
So speaking of food, you were, well, at least food and libation, you were a regular staple at Rao's Bar in East Harlem, right?
Yeah. Well, they're like, you know, it was where I was born. It's like family. And I've been going down to Rao's since the early 70s, like 72.
And you were telling me how long Rao's has been around.
1896, they opened, and it's been the same family for many, many years. It's a staple in the neighborhood. It's one of the last remnants of what East Harlem in its heyday was. I mean, in the 1950 census, East Harlem had the most American citizens of Italian descent than any place.
Really?
In the world, outside of Italy. Yes, and a lot of people don't know because they always talk about Little Italy downtown.
Uh-huh.
But being at Little Italy geographically is such a small area, and it was really by the seaport, and that's why the immigrants of 1900 settled there. When they got to the point where they had these families, and they moved uptown for the bigger apartments, there was work because they were building the New York Central, they were building the subway in New York, so there was a lot of work up there, and the Paisanos moved up there.
So Rao's was significant also because this is where your Goodfellas connection comes from, if I'm
It was funny because I went to an open call Goodfellas when I decided that all of a sudden I could, you know, this acting is a natural thing, whatever. When people used to come in my store and say, Johnny, we're not only here for the great sandwiches and the coffee, we're here for the show. And you know, it never dawned on me about entertainment and, you know, I never considered myself an artist. Creativity coming from making sandwiches and my hands. But in retrospect, I understand now what's going on.
Well, this is another reason to slam Subway because they call themselves sandwich artists and we're talking to a real sandwich artist here.
Yes, that's true.
You know, screw
that.
That's
true. That's true. Well, you have to have taste buds. And basically 80% of the American people evidently don't. I mean, you know, if you want to go to Olive Garden and call it Italian food, fine.
Yeah.
You know, I wish them all the best in corporate, public traded stock company. Good for you. But you want to come into grandma's kitchen and you want to sit at her table, which is not in the dining room. It's in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
You understand? The irony of it all is that with America being the great place that it is and people with the prosperity that they have these commercial stoves, these great kitchens in their home, big dining areas, and they go out to eat. They're never in their kitchen cooking. It's funny.
So you ended up at an open call for Goodfellas. Is that what you're about to say?
Yeah, I was down 57th Street, Ellen Lewis. I went. It was open call, so you didn't have to have a resume, which I didn't have. I didn't even have a picture, by the way. And Ellen liked me because of the way I speak, my tempo. I'm New York all the way. So she called me back. And meanwhile, a couple of days after I went and meet with her on 57th Street, I'm in Rao's at the bar, and Nick Pileggi calls me. He says, Johnny, I'm coming down tonight with Scorsese. I want him to meet you. Says, all right, Nick, I'm here. You know, I mean, I lived up the street.
Yeah.
So when Nick Pileggi comes in with Marty, Ellen Lewis is with him. And Ellen Lewis says, Johnny. You know, she remembered me.
Oh, yeah. So this wasn't a setup for you to meet Marty? This was just more
No. It's just, you know, make sure you're in the bar because Marty's coming down. And Ellen Lewis would have, and I had just read maybe 3 days before. And Ellen remembered me. She said, she goes, Johnny, what are you doing here? It was almost like she thought it was a setup. And I says, Ellen, I live up the street. What are you doing here?
Because isn't Rao's famous for having something like 8 tables, which 7 of which are always reserved, and you're lucky to get that one?
The whole place is reserved.
Yeah.
The whole place is reserved.
Okay.
So he got, evidently, Nick got a favor from someone who has a table
I see.
There every week. So I met him there, and And it was funny because he cast quite a few characters out at a bar.
Sure.
And my friend Peter Cicali, who's passed away since then, my friend Michael Contessa was cast. And these were not actors at all, you know. And Marty called me to read. And, you know, I thought it was a big mistake. I said, you know, I said to him, you know, I was all... That was a great audition. It's one I'll never forget, because if you really want to say you screwed up royally, but I was myself, and that's what really got me a part in that great film, was just being me.
What makes you say you screwed up royally?
Oh, I was pissed. I was pissed because the actor that was reading with me, first of all, Marty, you know, he segued me into this whole thing by asking about the neighborhood and where I'm from, and then the nickname and the whole bit came in, and I'm just having a conversation, and then this actor comes and sits at the table. I don't even take notice of it. That's anything out of the ordinary, and what happens is he starts reading the scene, and everyone read the scene. If you remember with Paulie and Henry, they're talking about the bar, you know, Paulie and the Tony Darrow character.
Talking about the Bamboo Lounge?
The Bamboo Lounge.
Yes.
He says, you know, there's Tommy, he's this, he's that.
Right, what am I gonna do?
And then Ray Liotta, Henry, is behind him.
Yes.
And Paulie's listening to him. He says, I don't, you know, I can't. So everybody read that scene.
Okay. Which part were you reading?
The Tony Darrow part, reading the scene. And everybody read that scene. Read that part.
Okay.
And this guy's reading the Paul Savino role, but he's reading it by looking at his shoes, reading the script. So once I realized, this is the time we have to do this, I'm trying to answer him, and I'm trying to actually look into his eyes.
And you're not getting anything
back. No, I'm seeing the top of his head. And then I got pissed, and I says, hey, listen, forget it. I waste your time. I talk to real guys, and they look at me, and this guy's looking at his feet, you know. And so Marty loved it.
What did the guy do? Was he
– No, he didn't do anything. Maybe he was instructed to do that. But Marty went crazy. He was laughing. He was like – and I didn't know. I just really thought I screwed the whole thing up. And I said, you know, maybe this is not for me. I'll go back to making my eggplant Parmesan heroes, and that's it. So I left kind of like, you know what, you know. And I was a little – be honest with you, I was a little intimidated. Not that I fear anything, because I really don't, but because when I saw some of the guys that were up there, they were recognizable faces to me who, you know, I turn on the TV or I go to a movie and they're in it, and then here I am, I'm making provolone and salami sandwiches, you know. It was kind of like a very strange atmosphere for me to be in, and, you know, I says, oh, man, you know, I don't want to make an ass out of myself, you know.
I was going to ask you about that, especially when you met Scorsese at Rayo's. What kind of nerves were present at the time? I mean,
No. Remember, Rayo's is my backyard.
Right, okay.
I'm at the bar. I'm there. This is like we were down there every night having a few drinks with all my friends, and I'm, you know,
I should talk to him. He was probably nervous.
Yeah, I was comfortable. Oh yeah, he met some real guys too when
really?
He was down there. Oh yeah.
Oh boy, those are stories.
It was a great night. It was a great night.
Now, your scene, your significant scene in Goodfellas happens to be one of my favorite. And I think you do a tremendous job. I feel like in acting, the hardest thing to do is when someone else is speaking to convey something concrete. And you have this look of being chastened by De Niro that makes me feel for you in such a – I mean, your character is a deplorable character. He's probably a murderer. He's certainly a thief.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there feeling such empathy for you. What was that scene like? We'll talk about De Niro and Pesci and Scorsese a little bit later, but just that scene.
Well, the thing is, you know, when Marty called me into the trailer one-on-one, he sat there, you know, just talking. He says, John, he says, look, he says, I know you're a tough guy. He says, because I know where you're from. He says, but I need you here to really, really express a little bit of intimidation and fear. And you know that Jimmy has killed a lot of people. And you know that you're a little bit worried about what's going on when he gets his anger up. He says, that's it. I says, that's it? He says, yeah. So what happened was when I met Robert De Niro.
Was it on the day or did you meet him
on that day?
Okay, yeah.
I was a little bit, I was telling Marty, where is he, this guy? I have to do this with him. What if he don't like me?
Now the nerves are setting in. Yeah, not now, at Rails. No,
well, now it's setting in because, I mean, this is it, you know? And he says, Johnny, don't worry. He'll like you. Just, you know, don't worry. So when De Niro comes on the set now and he introduces himself, so we're kind of getting to know one another, you know, and he goes, so what? Let me ask you something. What are you, a cop? Cop? Who's a cop? I says, I'm a bologna cutter. I'm not a cop. He says, a what? I says, I'm a bologna cutter. You got a problem with that? You know, I tell, you know. So he went, no. So Marty says, deli, you know. You know, something to that extent in the background. But meanwhile, we're just chatting because they're getting the lights set up. I mean, you know how a set is. I mean, you know, I'm in the middle of all of this chaos. I have no idea what's going on. I'll be honest with you, none.
Sure. But I love that you say bologna cutter, and if he doesn't immediately think you work in a deli, that sounds like some euphemism for either like you're a murderer or some kind of lurid sexual thing. He's probably going, what the hell does that mean? Hilarious.
Okay, yeah, continue. Yeah. So he says, I says, can I call you Bobby? He says, yeah, of course. He says, of course. He says, oh. I says, you know, I said, I can't believe this. This is fantastic. I said, but I said, you know, I did something I have to tell you, you know. He says, well, what is it? I said, oh, I don't, you know, and I'm just lingering this thing out, and I'm going, I really have to tell you, and I'm lowering my volume. I have to tell you, and De Niro was so funny because he can't hear me, and he's getting closer and closer, and I'm setting him up without realizing I'm setting him up because he's getting like very close. I said, "Listen, Bobby, only in the movies could you ever yell at me like this, because remember something, I'm a lot tougher than you." And he looked at me, and I'm straight now. Bah! He starts laughing. He yells at Marty. Marty, this guy got me. He got me. And from that point on, we were great. We were great because he was so generous with what he did with me in the scene. You know, him yelling at me over and over. And, of course, the editing by Thelma Schumacher. I mean, come on. You know. What,
all the ingredients.
I mean, you said something before, which I thank you for the compliment. That's one of the favorite scenes of yours in the movie. But that's Thelma's doing. She brought out the best, you know, because, believe me, I had no idea what I was doing.
You cannot tell. The other thing I love about that scene is we'll talk about how much you guys improvised, how much was scripted, but it seems to go through two cycles where he scolds you, and it seems to die down, and everything might be okay, and he turns away, and you still sneak in this is my wife's name, and he just turns around, and you've raised his ire again, and I want to scream, Johnny Roast Beef, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, well, see, Bobby tells me, he says, I need you to do me a favor. So now here I am, I'm going to do him a favor. I said, what do you need, money? You know, he says, somewhere along the line, I want you to tell me not to get excited.
Oh.
So I says, okay, that's it? He says, yeah. I don't, So, and another.
So most of it was improvised then.
I love that car. It was kind of like, that's something guys say in the neighborhood. Something that being there, Frannie McGee, who plays Mrs. Johnny Roast Beef, she was great. I loved her. But she had no scripted dialogue, okay?
But I love
so
that.
I gave it a line. I told her, I says, listen, I said, Frannie, you're standing there with them big boobs sticking out. I says, you got to help me out here. She says, what do you want me to do? I says, yeah, tell this De Niro you love the car. She says, not only not only will get you to say something, but we'll also see if he's as good an actor as they say he is. She says, but what about Marty? I said, what about Marty? If he likes it, he keeps it. If he tells you shut your mouth, you shut your mouth. I mean, take a shot. She says, really? I says, yeah, yeah. So in the middle of it all, she comes in and she says, but I love that car. And De Niro doesn't skip a beat. He says, honey, you know. And he just stops serving her tracks, and he gets back. And I think, personally, it made the scene even better that she got involved in there trying to protect me.
She must love you for getting her a line.
No, so the funny thing is that she went on to do stand-up comedy, and she's imitating me, I hear, on the set of doing all of this. She had called her agent and said, I got a line in the movie. And he had, she's great, Marty gave you a line. She says, no, Johnny gave me a line. She says, who's Johnny? Really funny.
One thing I love about this, too, is, okay, so you come in, the door opens, and you see this beautiful pink Coupe de Ville, but it's still got the invoice on it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about, is just Johnny roast beef? It has to show everybody how much the car cost. Because also, not to skip ahead, but in your death scene, the invoice is still on there, and it's stained with blood. The details in this are amazing.
That's Marty. Marty, I knew exactly. Neighborhood thing with the invoice. Neighborhood thing.
Just got to show what you paid.
Yeah. You know. Remember, most of these guys were really from poverty backgrounds, you know.
Yeah.
Living.
They're proud of their accomplishments.
Yeah. So, you know, you get out and you don't know how to handle money. That's the thing. The immigrant experience in America, once they get successful, they're gaudy, some of them. They don't know how to handle money.
Interesting.
I mean, they get these big mansions and they got plastic on the living room furniture and the dining room furniture. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous because it's really ignorance. They don't know how to handle money. Whereas you get, you know, the Kennedys and you get the DuPonts
money.
And the, you know, they're born into wealth.
Uh-huh. Now, was this scene was on location, right? Where did you guys shoot?
Yeah, it was shot in Queens, mostly. In the borough of Queens, the bar was right off of Richmond Hill, Liberty Avenue, the L, that area of Queens.
And, you know, if it's still there.
Yeah, and then the dead scene under that trestle, I think that's Maspeth area. There's that Italian restaurant. I think that restaurant's still there, Sorrento's.
And how long was that first scene? How many takes did you do of that?
Oh, the actually first day of the shoot was our death scene.
You're kidding.
In the Cadillac.
The first day of the whole film shoot?
The first day of the whole film shoot. And I'll tell you why that was instrumental in my career is there was somebody from the Daily News there, and they had no one to shoot except Franny and myself in a car with the kids finding the car.
Yeah.
So we were the only actors. I mean, come on, you know what
so
I mean?
You got a movie
with,
knows,
got a
you
movie
two
with Paul Sabino, Ray Liotta, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, and then it's all these great actors. And then the first day, you got Johnny Williams and Franny McGee. Who? You know, who? But the funny thing was that the death scene was so real, so realistic, the way they had it in the New York Daily News. They had the picture of Franny and myself in the car with the blood, you know.
It's an iconic shot.
And this is black and white at that time, and white. So my aunt thought they killed me. She thought somebody shot me in a car. She calls my mother. This is unbelievable. She calls my mother, and she's crying on the phone. What happened to Johnny?
You're kidding me.
And she goes, what? What happened? She says, he's in the paper. What paper? She says, no, he's doing a movie. Doing a movie. He's an actor now. You know, like, she says, yeah, he's doing a movie. And so they actually had on page 6, they had There I Am with Franny, and it's incredible. And then, is it a hit? It's a new movie that they started.
Oh, my God.
And so it put me kind of on the map in the sense that, you know, I'm in the paper. I'm in page 6. So I'm in my deli. Meanwhile, I don't know I'm on page 6. 6 o'clock in the morning, I get a call from one of my friends from the old neighborhood. And he talked, hey, Johnny, you know, Johnny, you're in the paper. You come good. I says, what? Yeah, you're in the paper. You come good. So I go get, and there I am. And that was it. I mean, that, you know, that kind of, you know, everybody at that time read the Daily News.
Sure, yeah.
Forget about internet at that time. It was all the news. So the first day of the shoot, there I am. So a lot of kind of things happened to me and for me personally that took a lot of luck where, you know, actors that go to Juilliard and have great talent. If they don't get – I mean, who gets shot like this?
Yeah,
you know, so I got all of that happened in a way that it's almost like, you know, the hand of whoever says, it's your turn. Thank
That's
you.
Wonderful. That's funny. There's a bit of an eerie coincidence to what you just told me because in doing my research, I found this newspaper article, and it says, couple shot dead in Goodfellas-style execution in car outside New York cemetery, and they liken the whole hit to your scene, your
yeah,
death scene.
Amazing.
And yeah, it's pretty eerie. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Pesci and De Niro and Scorsese and your part in Goodfellas. We're back with Johnny Williams. He played Johnny Roastbeef in Goodfellas. Now, I wanted to ask you why you think De Niro thought you were a cop. Was that just his way of breaking your balls or what?
Well, maybe, you know, he never saw me before. That's one. And number two, the way I kind of handled myself on a set, you know, I got a little swagger about me, some confidence, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that might have, and I'm a New York guy, and he saw that. Uh-huh. So I don't know how he came up with that assessment, or maybe he was told, you know, we hired a real cop to do a part, and he got confused with me.
Interesting.
You know, because I think Marty did talk to him about me, that I got a deli guy, you know.
There is a real cop in the movie, the guy that eventually turns Henry Hill, played himself, mm-hmm. the real guy. And it's funny, too, because the segment where you buy the car for your wife is loosely based on a real thing with one of the Lufthansa heist guys, Angelo
yes.
Seppi. And I was listening to that very cop who's in the movie, or Fed, talk about it. And he said that that Angelo Seppi had a Thunderbird, and they bugged his Thunderbird. And the only thing they ever heard was the heater going, disco playing, and like arguments with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
He never got
yeah.
anything out of it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to that death scene. That was the first day of the shoot. What kind of – was it intensive makeup that you had to go through?
Yeah, it was because the makeup artist says, Johnny, how many holes should I give you?
Seriously, you got to choose?
I says, just give me two. I'm not that tough. So
– Well, Franny chose a few more, didn't she?
Yeah, Franny was great. And it was funny because while they were doing, I mean, even the hands, they made our hands kind of like slight purplish blue, like you would
yeah.
lose your blood. I mean, you didn't get to see it, but, you know, they were really detailed. While they were doing it, I'd say it was a good over an hour to do all of that. And so I look behind me in the mirror in the makeup trailer and I see this hair on a dummy. And I says, what the hell is that? He says, oh, that's Joe Pesci's hair. I says, Joe Pesci's
oh,
hair.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, he's got a wig, make him look younger. And all. So I says, wow. So what happens is later on in the afternoon, as they're doing the makeup, Pesci shows up because he has to work on scenes later on in the afternoon. And he opens the makeup door. And I knew Joe from the Bronx uh-huh. from before. And he goes, hey, Roast Beef. You look like crap, you know, because I got this makeup on. I go, yeah, Joe, but at least they do my hair. It's on my head. Yeah, and he was pissed.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like the
type
to take a joke.
No, but he's a good guy. I mean, he's a great guy. He slams the door, you know.
I only say that because the most iconic scene in this film is him not taking a joke. So how long did you have to lie there dead for the day?
Well, they set the shot up. The camera moves slowly from the grill of the Cadillac, which would be the eye line of the kids that discover the car there. So, you know, they had to set up the tracks. They had to, you know, they had to set up the movement of the camera to start out in the front of the Cadillac, catching the whole grill, the plate and all, 254 Yip.
Yeah.
I don't forget that.
Is there any significance to that, or is that just random?
I played that number for.
How did it do for you?
Nah. So the camera comes up and then over the grill onto the front hood, the massive hood of the Caddy, and then you catch the glimpse of my character with the, and then it swivels to the blood to Franny's character, and then the blood on the bill, on
the invoice.
The invoice, yeah. Right? And all the while, look at what Marty lays over it, Layla.
Yeah.
I mean, unforgettable. Uh-huh. It kind of makes the impression perfect music for a perfect scene.
Well, that's where my questions are all leading. Did you at the time have any idea that this was your scene right there is going to kick off maybe one of the most famous film montages in history?
No idea.
Because I also read that he occasionally would play bars of Lalo while he was shooting some of these shots to make sure they lined up, but he wasn't doing that day on the set.
No, I don't know what he was doing. Oh. All I know is that Franny had a hard time sitting still in the car.
Yeah,
because she had to go to the bathroom, and I said, Franny, just stay still, because if you move around, we're going to be here longer, and if you don't stay still and act dead, I will kill you. It was funny.
I wonder sometimes if it's the harder acting is sitting still when
lay
dead.
It is.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'll go to sleep in a heartbeat, you know, because yeah. My daughter even said, Dad, you were dead, you were sleeping, you know. And she know, you know. So, Franny had to go to the bathroom and, you know, being that everything was set up there, she couldn't get out of the car.
Do you remember about how many times you had to do the take on that?
Oh, a number of times.
Yeah, plenty. You know. Did you have any scenes that didn't make the film?
No.
No? That's nice.
Everything was there.
That and 1,000.
Yeah, everything was there, 100%.
When the film, you wrap and then the film comes out, did you get to go to any kind of screening or premiere?
I went to the first screening in the Time Warner in Rockefeller Center, and it was on a third of the size screen, and I hated it.
What?
I hated it.
Why?
I didn't get it. I just didn't get it.
Because were you expecting something more in the tone of a Godfather or something? Or what about
I don't know what I was expecting, but I says, oh, you know, I just didn't get it. And then what happened was when I went to the premiere on 3rd Avenue, I took my mother, rest her soul. She had a good time. Wow. On that big screen, it was just so different. I mean, the impact was there. And when it came out, I'm on the screen for what? Maybe 2 minutes, but it was very, very recognizable and very almost a calling card to a new career.
I'm sure.
I mean, that's what it was.
Did the deli become a bit of a destination for people to see Johnny Roast Beef?
Yeah, well, I was out. I got out of the deli.
Oh, at that point.
I got out of the deli because...
And that's about the time that you came to L.A., right?
After that? Yeah, about a year later. But the thing is, the thing about the deli was that, you know, what was I going to do? I was going to be a partner or I was going to be an actor.
And tell us a little bit about what you're working on now, if there's any projects you want to...
Well, now I'm in development of a movie that I wrote. I wrote a script called Who Killed Jimmy Gumdrops? So I'm in development with that. And I did a TV show, a sitcom that I wrote called Mama and Son. And it's loosely based on a place like Rayo's. It's been there a long time. And Mama is my mother, and she gave me the restaurant. And Son is my daughter, who is the product of a divorce. And he's old school, and she's graduated college. And she comes to work with her father in the restaurant. And we find out that she had a broken heart in college. It's on YouTube.
If we just search Mama and Son.
MamaAndSon.com. And you got a 2-minute trailer.
One last question. Have you been to the Rayos that they opened in L.A.?
Yes, I'm there quite a bit.
How's it hold up?
I'm there a couple of nights a week, and they have a gravy night on Sunday, which is great because it's the macaroni. We call it macaroni, but the pasta with the meatballs, the brajol, the sausage, salad, like you would have on a Sunday afternoon. We know that from the old neighborhood and from being Italian, Italian-American. This was traditional, the macaroni, Sunday, You went to church in the morning, you got the buns, and then your grandmother's cooking the meatballs, you know.
Listen, I don't have an Italian drop of blood in me, but I always feel like my tongue is split. Half Italian taste buds and half Mexican taste buds.
That's
favorite food.
So. Italian food, if it's done right, it's just got to watch the amounts.
wise words. Johnny, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great to hear your stories.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, the good Lord knows I love the movie Goodfellas, so we're not even going to stop there. We're going to continue with more just delicious Goodfellas information in a segment called...
I... was really there too.
Now, this may actually be a segment that I repeat again, because any movie based on true events changes it for artistic license. And this one gets a lot of things right, but the differences that are there are significant. So just to recap the basics of this film, if you haven't seen it in a while. It's based on a book called Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi, based on the mobster Henry Hill, who in the film is played by Ray Liotta. It's the story of Henry Hill's life amongst the gangsters and becoming part of Paul Vario's crew, along with his friend Tommy. So the real people are Henry Hill, whose name is the same, Tommy DeSimone, the Joe Pesci character, and this can get a little confusing, but Paul Vario is the real man played by Paul Sorvino, but as the character Paulie Cicero. So now that we've got that straight, here are some interesting elements that actually happen. In the film, when Henry goes away to jail like he did in real life, his wife Karen actually had an affair with Paul Vario, Paulie Cicero, played by Paulie Sorvino. Except it's Paul Sorvino. Listen, who cares? Also, the real Tommy tried to have sex with Karen when he was in jail and she refused. Then he tried to rape her. When Paul Vario found out, he told the Gambinos, the real crime family, that Tommy DeSimone had killed two other made men. But Paul himself had actually okayed that, he just wanted Tommy dead. And dead is what happened. In 2007, Henry Hill confirmed that not only was Tommy killed by the Gambinos, it was actually John Gotti, the Teflon Don, who did the deed. It was always assumed it was payback for Billy Batts, like the film, but it really wasn't. It was Paul getting revenge for Tommy trying to have his way with Karen. Okay, stay with me. So in the movie, Tommy has a closed casket because, as they say, he was shot in the face and he didn't want his mother to see him like that, but the truth is Tommy's body was nowhere to be found and to this day has still never been found. The real Tommy DeSimone, unlike the movie, was 7 years younger than Henry Hill and was actually a tall, burly thug. He was killed at the age of 28. Now, back to Paul Vario, who in the movie is portrayed as this avuncular, sweet, benevolent gangster, but he was actually known to have lots of violent outbursts. In fact, he once took a 13-year-old Henry Hill with him to a barmaid's house that he was having an affair with. That barmaid told Paul's wife that this affair was going on, and so he beat her with a baseball bat and broke her collarbone. Nice fella. And lastly, the character of Spider, who in the film is shot by Tommy at the poker table because he's basically just a low-level mob associate serving boy and decides to speak up to Tommy, wasn't actually the real story. Allegedly, Tommy was very envious of the real Spider, Michael Gianco, because he thought he was more likely to be made before he was, so he killed him. You know, as you do. But there is an interesting story. When they were shooting the film of Goodfellas, Michael Imperioli, who is the actor portraying Spider, was rigged up with blood-packed squibs.
Love him.
And when they all ignited and he was doing his death scene in the movie, he fell down and the glass he was holding broke in his hand and cut him pretty badly. So he was rushed to the hospital. And when he was brought into the emergency room, the doctors thought that he had been riddled with bullets in a gangland murder. They were trying to work on his chest and see what the situation was there. And he kept saying, "It's my hand, it's my hand." And then they realized that and made him wait 3 hours. And these have been some actual facts from the real characters and events. Not just facts, fun facts. We're having a good time. As far back as I remembered, I always wanted to be a podcaster. Now, let's get back to the podcast just so it can end.
I was really there too.
That's it for today's I Was There Too. Leave a review on iTunes. I'd love to thank Helen Harlan, who set me up with the great Johnny Williams from Goodfellas. Thank you, Helen. And if you know of somebody that is perfect for this show and this system is starting to work, please email me at iwasthere2pod@gmail.com. Thank you for your ears.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.